Hello. You are listening to the Grieving Parents Sharing Hope podcast. We are here to walk with parents on their unwanted journey of child loss, guiding them to a place of hope, light, and purpose, not in spite of their child's death, but as a way to honor his or her life. And now, here is your host, author, speaker, and bereaved parent, Laura Deal.
Hi, I am excited to introduce my new friend to you, Lisa Espinoza. We had a great conversation with some nuggets that I think will be really helpful to you. I need to let you know that I did not have my podcast microphone, so the quality on my end is not going to be quite the same as it usually is. Before I have Dave play the recording of our conversation, let me introduce Lisa to you. Author and speaker Lisa Espinoza is a trusted companion to others along their journeys of grief. In her book, First Brush Your Teeth, Grief and Hope in Real Time, Lisa shares with raw honesty the story of losing her youngest son, Chandler, reminding us that hope and joy are possible even after the greatest heartache and loss. So with that, here is my talk with Lisa. Well, hi, Lisa. Thank you for joining me today and sharing your story and your words of encouragement with the listeners. I'm really excited to have you here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I just consider it a privilege to be able to share with my fellow members along this journey.
Yes. Yeah. I would like to have us start out by having you share Chandler with us, please.
Well, I may get a little emotional because it's his birthday next week, July 2nd. So Chandler was my youngest, even all these years later, it's hard to, it seems surreal, but he was my youngest son and just a joy, a lover of life, a liver of life, golfer, hiker, dancer, body surfer, everything that you can do that moves your body and out in nature. Just an amazing young man, very like an old soul, a mischievous old soul. So Chandler was known for causing many phone calls to our house because one thing or another, I would get a phone call and, oh, he's cracked his cervical vertebrae. He was body surfing. He's fine.
Oh,
he picked up a rattlesnake on the golf course. He's in the hospital.
No.
But we don't think he was bit, so he's going to be fine. He's got bruised ribs from being on his bike. Oh, he's going to be fine. He fell out of his toy box when he was like 3 years old and broke his collarbone. He was fine. So there was always, there was always some stitches because of cutting his leg on his bike pedal. There was always something. He was a BMX biker. So he did upside down, flip team tricks and all the stuff. So that we were not new to, any of those phone calls. So on December 15th, 2018, I was at TJ Maxx getting all of my gifts for Secret Santa for work. And I was about ready to pay, had my cart in front of me. I get a call from Mission Hospital. And they said, is this Ms. Espinoza? Is this Chandler's mom? And I said, yes. What's wrong? And they said, he's been hit by a car. And I thought, because of the whole history, I thought, okay, he's got a broken leg. He's got a broken arm. Here we go again. And I said, is he okay? And they said, can you get here in 30 minutes? And I hung up and it's just the craziest thing. For a split second, I thought, well, I'll just go ahead and pay for my stuff.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure he's going to be fine. And then it just hit me. He's been hit by a car. Oh my gosh. And I just, pushed the cart, got out in my car, started driving to the hospital. And that began an 18-day, it felt like living, 100 lives in 18 days. He had a severed his spine, spinal fracture, so he would be paralyzed had he survived, and severe traumatic brain injury, like diffuse axonal injury of the worst kind. And so we lost him on January 1st, 2019. So that is, January 1st, happy new year, every year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So, did you guys end up having to make the decision that he was done?
Yeah. And
Oh.
it was with the help of a neurosurgeon who said, this is as bad as it can be. And yeah, it was horrific. And so the way that I dealt with in day to day, a friend of mine had said, you should write a blog on Caring Bridge to keep people updated on how he's doing day to day, because everybody's asking, they want updates on how he's doing. And I said, I don't think I have it in me. I don't want to do that. And she said, think about it. You're a writer, and I think it can help people if you do this. So after a day or two, I thought about it and I started this blog on Caring Bridge. And every day I would write, this is what happened today. But I was also processing my feelings around it. And people began to tell me that my words somehow were helpful to them in something that they were going through. So as the days went on, and after we lost Chandler, I found out that he wanted to be a writer. And I just thought, I'm going to write every single day. So once I finished the Caring Bridge blog, I brought all those daily, blog posts over to my website. Oh, I started my website and I continued to write. And I said, I'm going to write every single day for this first year. And I'm going to process what this is and pray that other people can be helped somehow by, what I'm going through, being honest about what I'm going through. And at the end of that year, I said, I'm gonna publish this. Chandler wanted to be a writer, and he's helped. I just felt him with me every day when I didn't want to write. I didn't feel like writing. I just wanted to be to just pretend like maybe I didn't lose my son, today. And but I just felt like he was with me, and I thought, I'm gonna publish this, and it's going to be a testament to Chandler, to his life, to the fact that he wanted to be a writer. And that's how First Brush Your Teeth, Grief and Hope in Real Time came to be. And I'm just, the story of Chandler is there, but more than anything, I feel like it's hope and it's joy. Because when we lose a child, the last thing we ever think that we can experience ever again is joy and hope. And yet, if you just allow yourself to be open, you don't have to say, yes, I'm going to feel joy and hope again. You don't have to manufacture something, but if you can just find it in you to say, I'm open for the possibility of hope or joy again, it helps move one foot in front of the other. That's the name of the book, First Brush Your Teeth. It's that I don't want to get up. It's hard to breathe. I don't know who I am right now. I don't know what to do. I don't know. Just first brush your teeth. Just get up, brush your teeth. And after you brush your teeth, maybe you'll have the energy to go get dressed. And maybe if you get dressed, you'll go downstairs and get a cup of coffee. And maybe if you sit on the couch for a minute, maybe you'll feel like texting a friend, or maybe picking up a book that is encouraging. But one foot in front of the other, starting with just first brush your teeth, it's got to start somewhere small.
I know a lot of parents have, when they're in the very beginning of I hear them say something like, "Well, good for you. I'm glad you were able to do that. I just don't see me ever getting to that point."
Yeah.
But I mean, like you said, you didn't see yourself getting to that point.
No.
I couldn't imagine ever being happy, ever having a fulfilled life. But then I also couldn't imagine living out the rest of my life with this much pain either.
Yes.
I
Yes,
mean,
it's
you just feel
unbearable.
so, yes, you just feel so caught and
Yeah.
trapped. Now, how old was Chandler?
25.
Okay, he was 25. You have said that there, we all know there's that saying, there's no wrong way to grieve.
Yeah.
But you say there is a wrong way to grieve and that you perfected it.
I
But
did.
it wasn't when you lost Chandler. Can you tell us
Right.
about that?
So when I was 18, my mom died of lung cancer, and I'd always said if my mom ever passed, I couldn't live. Like, she was just, I adored her. We were close, and she passed. And my way of dealing with it was really just denial and minimization. So rather than crying and facing this reality of this huge loss in my life, I put her makeup on her in her casket. I sang at her funeral. I didn't cry for weeks. I just minimized. I said, you know what? That's just a body. My mom's soul and spirit are in heaven, and that's just a body. Well, yeah, it's just a body, but it's the body that held me and cared for me and hugged me and kissed my cheek and made me feel
Yeah, we
better.
try to say our body's not part of it, but it is us. It's the part that it's the tangible part that we know.
It's the container. It's the people can't know us apart from our container in this life. And so that was my way of dealing with it. And it kind of came out sideways. It was really, really difficult. I would have nightmares and my husband would, hold me. And I just that was the wrong way. That was the wrong way to do it, was to just minimize and act like, it's just a body. It's okay. She's in heaven. Well, okay, but there's a reality here to be accepted and felt and moved through and with. So that's what I learned. And that was 18, so all these years later, I'd lived a lot of life and learned a lot. And I knew better than to minimize or, well, there's a reason for everything. No, it's I don't that's no, I lost my son. And that's just the hardest thing. So
Now, there are a lot of ways to grieve. We don't all do it the same way, but what are some of the things that you did when Chandler died that helped you, especially like after the situation with your mom? I mean, when Chandler died, did you find yourself crying a lot, doing things to keep yourself from getting stuck like that?
yeah, so I cried when I needed to cry. I let myself feel what I needed to feel when I needed to feel it. There were times when I knew I can't lose it right now because I'm in a parking lot and I have to exit. Like there's certain times where you just go, like, I have to compartmentalize right now because this can't, I can't. But when I get home, I'm going to fall apart and that's okay. So I felt what I needed to feel. And I read his journals and I looked at his pictures, but I couldn't do everything all the time, every day. It was too much. It was just too much. It had to be measured for me. One of the things that I did was I kind of fixed up his room because it was a mess. Not gonna lie about that. Fixed up his room. We let his friends come in, and of course, our family and anybody that wanted things that were meaningful to them, they could take those things. And so we kind of did his room where we got like one of his jerseys hung up with his name on it and just some memorabilia, things that were meaningful to him. That's one of the things we did. And it was hard to let go of some things, but I didn't want to sit in that dangerous place of making it like a mausoleum or where nothing's touched for 2 years and then I got to deal with. I just the way I dealt with it was to make something beautiful in his room early on for me. That was just my timing, and that was one thing that helped me a lot. Allowing people to come in and help me was huge. A friend came and helped me kind of start clearing out some things in his room that were just, junk. And, friends that would say, "Can I bring you a smoothie?" You know what? Yeah, I would love for you to bring me a smoothie. Allowing people to come alongside you blesses them as much as it blesses you. It's so easy to isolate. It's so easy to just, I'm not fun to be around right now. I don't want to be around people because I'm just, But when you have those friends that want to be around you when you're down, let them. You'll find those that don't really know how. You'll find that there are friends and they're friends, but they just don't know how to be with someone in their pain. So when you have a friend that's willing to be with you in your pain, let them come in. Of course, my faith, I mean, that was the core of everything for me to help me through.
Did
I
you
did
feel like your
yoga.
faith was shaken at all? Did you have questions? How did that affect you and your relationship with the Lord?
I really I didn't, and I don't know why. I just didn't. I didn't question God. Why him? Why Chandler?
I have a podcast topic I want to talk about fairly soon, but it seems like over the years, as I've talked to parents, it seems like a lot of us believers, we have a relationship with God, but so much of that relationship is transactional
Yes.
and instead of intimacy. It's okay, God, if you do this, I'll do this, or if I do this, then you do that. And so that's what I'm really dis have I what I've discovered over the years is that it seems like when we don't realize that our relationship with God has been more transactional, we struggle
Yeah.
because it's like I did everything I was supposed to do and you didn't keep up your end, God.
Yeah.
And if it's more intimate relationship, then there's a level of trust there that has
Yeah.
been built in the intimacy.
Yeah, and I guess I just, I don't think I never believed that there was a formula that if I just do all these right things, then all the good things will happen to me. Doing good things is great, and you yield wonderful rewards and benefits from doing good things, because that's the way it is. But life happens. Hard stuff happens. It just does. And why would something hard not happen to me or my child just because I
I
did
know
the
there was
right thing?
one dad, it was like talking about why me, and it's like, why not me? What makes me
Yeah.
think I'm above something like this?
Yeah. And I'm not immune to that. I mean, if something could happen next week or next year or whatever, and I'm not saying I'm immune to that. Why God? Why me? Why did that happen? But thus far in my life, and particularly with regard to Chandler, I didn't really question, why God. What I did just, I guess, realize to the depth of my soul that I really didn't know before is the magnitude and the profound nature of Emmanuel, God with us. And I wrote in one of my blog posts, because we were leading up to Christmas, and we were slowly, they were putting the pieces together about how bad this was, and I wrote, this all the only piece of theology that matters to me right now today is Emmanuel, God with us. And
I
that's
had that same thing. It was after Becca died. I can't remember if it was like the 5-year mark or when it was, but it was just one of those rough years. She died in October, but Christmas was her favorite, and she had these big, Christmas decorations. And I mean, she just went all out, and it was just a rough year. And I just felt this explosion in my soul, my spirit, just Emmanuel, God with us. And it's like, that's what I need. That's what I need this season is I need you with me. And I ended up turning it into, I wrote every day and ended up turning it into it's called Hope for the Future, an Advent Journey for Bereaved Parents. So just
and
like you,
that
it became a book, but
it's
that was
the
the same
deep,
thing. It was like, Emmanuel, I need you with me so desperately right now.
and it that being able to turn your worst heartache of in your whole life into something redemptive. There's something about that that is fulfilling. I will say it's a point of light in the middle of just some of the darkest times. When you hear someone say, "I read what you wrote and it gave me some hope. It gave me, I knew I could make it," or those are the things that you're like, okay, I would never check this box. I would never ask for this to happen, but it did. And this is about one of the best things that could be an outcome from it, is that it could somehow bring hope to somebody else.
That you learn how God wants you to walk with others in your own way, in your own way. And it may not even be others who've lost a child, but others who are facing
Exactly.
something. And I don't know, there's something we all feel like the worst thing that could ever happen to you is to lose a child. And then when it happens, it's like, yeah, now I know that is the worst thing that could ever happen to you.
That's it
And
dawned
you
on
become
me.
a safe place to other people.
Yes, it dawned on me sometime when I remember writing this blog this one day. I am one of those people now. I'm one of those people.
Yes.
Because you always think, if I ever lost a child, I don't know what I would do. And it just, the reality hit me. I'm one of those people now. And it's sobering. And yet you survive and you move forward. And by the grace of God, you do find hope and you find joy and you're able to find redemptive points in the middle of all of it.
Now, Chandler was hit by a car and he was on his bike,
His
correct?
BMX bike, yeah.
And you had to go and pick up Chandler's bike from the police station. I can't even imagine. And you were also given a bag with his shoes and the Santa hat he was wearing. And you've talked about how your book is all your journal entries. I would like to read part of what you wrote at that time and then maybe talk about it a little bit. You said, "I will cry. I will feel as if my heart can't beat again. I will be angry. I will be unpredictable in my emotions and reactions. But by the grace of God, I will choose to trust Him in Christ, with Christ, and through Christ. My life, my stability, my strength, my hope. The path ahead is unclear to me, but it is not unclear for the one who leads me one step at a time." And then you referred to Jeremiah 29:11. Your faith, you say that your faith was going through some deconstruction and that grief is a teacher. So maybe, kind of tie in what we just read. Can you talk about that a little bit? What you mean by that?
I think that for me, in those moments, all of the things that I grew up with, that you don't do this, you don't do this, you don't do this, and you do this, this, and this. And it's very, very much contractual. Like this is the contract. This is what the contract looks like. And in those moments, a contract didn't matter to me. All that mattered to me was Emmanuel, God is with me. That's what mattered. And it was through people coming alongside me and literally holding me up when I picked up that bike. A friend of mine was there to help me pick up the bike. Those were the arms of Jesus to me. And every milestone that we hit that was a hard milestone, to have people come around, those were the arms of Christ to me. It just became all of the things that I thought growing up were really just really, this is important. It just wasn't as important to me anymore.
I like how you mentioned that people that were there for you was God being there for you through them, because I hear a lot of parents talk about how I just don't see God. I don't feel Him. He's not here. I keep crying out to Him, but He's just not here. Do you think sometimes it's because we're just missing how He's coming to us?
I do, because I can relate to it. I can relate to that. I don't feel like God is sitting by me right now. But my friend just texted me and said, "Do you need anything?" To me, those are the words of Christ to me. I'm here for you. What can I do? That is like people texting out of the blue saying, "Hey, I'm thinking about you today. Are you okay?" And you're having an extra hard day. Like, why did they feel the urge to text you that day? I do believe that if we keep our eyes open, and this is not to minimize what we might call a dark night of the soul at all. It's not just, well, open your eyes and you'll see God. But we do miss sometimes that, I'm looking for the boat. I'm looking for the boat to sail away. Well, here it is. Here's the boat. Here's friends in front of you, or there's a book. You've learned about this book that can be an encouragement. Look at that book or listen to this podcast. God uses people and resources to help us through our journey. And sometimes it's this supernatural feeling of his presence, and you just know, and you know that's for real. That happens. But a lot of the times when you're on a grief journey, that's not where you're at. You're not having this overwhelming, just ethereal, heavenly feeling like I'm being carried through this. It's gut-wrenching. And it's the boots on the ground stuff that you look at and go, yeah, God's with me. He's with me.
And it could even be something as simple as, You're out for a walk, and all of a sudden you see something you'd never seen before, whether it's a beautiful flower or
Yep.
hearing some bird chirping that is just so beautiful, or a rabbit jumping across the path that just
Yep.
makes you just, oh, that's cute. I mean, just even those little tiny things that can just bring that, just that slight glimmer of just even a warmth in your heart, or something that just takes that darkness away for just a few seconds.
Absolutely. Nature, just to be in nature
Yes.
and to see how creative and amazing God is, and all the vivid colors and shapes and all the things that he's made for us to enjoy. Like, he
Yes.
didn't have to make it beautiful. He could have made everything ugly, but we enjoy all this beauty. And you're right to just open our eyes and go, God, you are with me. You're with me. I drink pure, clean water. I eat delicious food. I get to pet my obnoxious weenie dog. I get to, hug my grandbabies. There's so many ways that you're here. You're with me. I just have to open my eyes and be able to recognize it.
Now that makes me think about your God and Moments gratitude journal. Now, this is something you started even before Chandler's accident. Is that
Yeah.
correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So
Yeah.
I like how you say in your book, well, let's just talk about that journal. You talked about reading his journal and all of that, but even before that, you had started a God Moments gratitude journal.
Yeah.
And then you continued that, correct? How did that was help you, or what did that do for you?
I did. I started that, and quite honestly, when I started writing about, every day with after ch losing Chandler, I it kind of went on the back burner because it was emotionally draining some days to write. Like, it was hard. It was a commitment to write every single day. But I kind of channeled, like, through my writing, through my blog, things I was thankful for, but I think for me, some people just are it's easier for some people to be thankful than others. It's easier for them to see things to be thankful for. That's just, I got my own struggles, but that's not one of them. Like, that, I just can look around my room right now and name 100 things I'm grateful for. But I wanted to do this gratitude journal just so that I would have it to look back at. And I still love the idea of it. I still got the half of the thing that I started. And I love the idea of it. So maybe I'll get back to it. But I'm a proponent of somehow, whether it's telling people, writing it in a journal, somehow making known what you're grateful for. There's a science of gratitude that people who are thankful are in general happier. And so, whether it's, getting a notebook or on your phone, there's a journal app, and every day you write, I'm grateful for three things, or you tell somebody every day, I'm grateful for these three things. I just think it's so important to every day acknowledge, or just get up and say, Lord, thank you for my clean sheets, for my, for toothpaste, for, I mean, just, there's so many things in every day to be grateful for. And I think when you're grieving, it's hard to reach for those things. But if you just start with the littlest thing right in front of you, it will grow.
Yeah. I know some people they'll say things like, well, just be thankful you're breathing. And we feel like, but I don't want to be breathing.
Yeah.
That's not something I'm thankful
Yeah.
for,
Yeah.
But like you said, there are so many things. I know someone did challenge me shortly, probably after Becca died, to do that, to get a notebook, and every night before I went to bed to write down 3 to 5 things, and they had to be
Yeah.
different. And it was even just thank you for the carpet that my feet aren't cold, on a cold
Absolutely.
floor, or thank you, I walked past a bakery and I smelled the bread baking. I mean, just
Yep.
tiny little things. Thank you that I have reading glasses so I can see to read if I want to read. Just about anything. Thankful for the remote so I don't, when I don't have the energy, I can change the channel
For sure.
when I don't have the energy to get up. So yeah. So I really strongly encourage that too. Because once you start, your eyes begin to be open to more things.
Yep.
And it's not like you'll ever say, well, I'm thankful my child died. I mean, that's never, we're not like saying you'll get to that point. That's just impossible. But a grateful heart allows more hope to come in. It
Yep.
allows you to begin to see a life of meaning and purpose again,
Yeah.
which a lot of us don't think that will ever happen, like we said at the beginning.
It's a
This
point of
whole
light. Gratitude is a point of light. So if you can imagine that you're in a dark place, you're grieving, you're hurting, and every time that you can acknowledge something that you're grateful for, it's a pinpoint of light in that dark. And it's not going to like just all of a sudden it's all sunlight and daylight. But in that darkness, every time you can just acknowledge something you're grateful for, there's a point of light. There's another point of light. There's another point of light. So it brings some light into a dark place.
I like that. I like that. Let's talk a minute about bittersweet. It's like so much of life just seems bittersweet now. Something that I read that you wrote, and I think you were at a wedding or an event or something. How can my feet be dancing when it feels like an anchor is holding me down? How can I laugh when tears soak my soul? Surrounded by all this love, my heart was overflowing. It was the best ever and the worst ever.
That's how life is. It's rarely all sweet. It's rarely just all good. Mostly it's a mix. Rarely, thankfully, is it such a stark contrast in the mix where you're grieving someone you've lost and you're dancing at a wedding. Thankfully, that's not the norm, but it happens. But it's always some degree of that. When do we ever have everything? All my kids are well. All the bills are paid. Nothing in the house is broken. The car's working. The job's going well. When is all of that in place ever? I mean, when it does happen, all of a sudden it's like, whoo, and then, and then life happens. It's all it's learning to live in the bitter and the sweet. It's always both and. It's never just either or.
And I think it's important we have to acknowledge the bitter, but then learn how to lean into the sweet.
I determined that it would not honor Chandler for my soul not to be happy, for my soul not to feel joy. It would not honor him at all. And he would be the first one on the dance floor. He would be the one closing down the thing.
Sounds like it, yeah.
So like for to dance, that's like, oh, Chandler. But it feels so contradictory. It feels like I can't, why should I dance when, I'm hurting so bad?
Yeah, and how can I be happy when my child isn't here and we forget where our child is? It's like our child is probably ecstatic. I mean, beyond anything we could ever
Better than
realize. And we
ever.
just see what they're missing out on here. We forget about what they're in
Yes.
on there.
Yeah, something far greater than what we even, a greater reality than what we even experience.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, but again, it's that giving yourself permission to say, yes, I'm grieving, I'm hurting just deeply, and I have an opportunity to step one foot into a joyful situation. I have an opportunity to dip my toe into something that might make me smile. I'm going to do that, even though I'm hurting.
And not feel guilty about
And not
smiling.
feel guilty. Yes.
It ties into one last thing I wanted to read from your book. You write, I know I have to feel the pain. But there's a balance. If I just look at pictures of Chandler all day, sit in his room, read his journal, watch his memorial video, I'm afraid I will become paralyzed by the pain of losing him. And I think that's so true when we just and at the beginning for me, I had to immerse myself in Becca's things because it was like my head knew she was gone, but my heart just couldn't accept it. It couldn't reconcile it. And so by immersing myself in her things, it was helping me to reconcile this had really happened. But I think we get to a point where we begin to choose to do that almost as a victim in our identity, and we begin to wallow in it to the point where it's not healthy.
Yeah, and we all need to, kind of gauge for ourselves, is this harming me or helping me?
And nobody
Like,
else can tell you that.
and nobody else can
I'm our
tell
spouse or
you,
anybody,
it's
because our
harming me
husbands
or
can say,
helping me.
why stop doing that to yourself?
Yep.
But I knew there was an exact moment. I was looking because we had pictures of actually her in her casket, as morbid as that might sound, it might not to parents, but we documented all of her cancer, all of her treatments, everything, and it just seemed like we had to document her death. And so I remember the exact moment when I was looking at these pictures and I just knew it's time to close this and not look at them anymore. I just knew that this was the last time I was going to be looking at these pictures. There was just something in me that it's like, it's time to let God pull me out of this darkness.
Wow. Well, it took courage and wisdom and insight to get that message and then do something with it, and honoring of your daughter to say, I will take care of myself. I
Yeah.
will take care of myself. In that way, I honor my daughter's life as well.
Well, how can people connect with you? I just love our conversation. There's been a lot of good things here, Lisa. Thank you.
Thank you. I would love to connect with people. My website is just lisaespinoza.com. Just lisaespinoza.com. And my book, First Brush Your Teeth, Grief and Hope in Real Time, is on Amazon, easy to get. I have another book that I wrote years ago that Chandler is in, called Days of Wine and Noses, Pep Talks for Tuckered Out Moms.
I like that.
And who knew when I wrote that little book, it's like bite-sized chapters that a mom can read quickly while she's in the bathroom alone, maybe when she's got toddlers.
Right.
And I just wrote it to encourage young moms. And who knew that those stories about my little guy would one day, I'd be writing a book about that, not having
Right.
that little guy in skin with skin on with me anymore.
Yeah, what a treasure to have that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, we will make sure we get a link to your website and write out your book so people know exactly what it is. If in case they forget, we know the grief fog that comes. How
Yeah.
quickly we
Yep.
forget. What was the name
Oh
of
yeah.
Lisa's book?
Yep.
Something
Absolutely.
about your teeth.
Just something about your teeth. Yeah. Don't lose your teeth or
Yeah,
something.
don't lose your teeth.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll put the title of the book in there and your website. So as we wrap this up, Lisa, I want to give you a chance to share any last thoughts you might have for the listeners.
What I would share with you, if your heart is heavy, you're grieving. I know how it can feel like there's, how do you do tomorrow? How do you get up? How do you just keep moving? I just want to encourage you to be open to the possibility of joy, to be open to the possibility of hope, one step at a time. So when you get up tomorrow, you just brush your teeth and you say, God, I'm open to the possibility of joy and hope.
Yes, I love that. Well, thank you, Lisa, so much for joining us today and just all the things that you shared with the listeners. And I hope a lot of them will get your book and continue to be encouraged by your journey with Chandler.
Thank you so much.
There was something that just seemed refreshing in talking to Lisa. I hope you felt that as well. I also hope you decide to check out her book, First Brush Your Teeth, to get even more encouragement as you take this journey step by step. Every week on the Grieving Parent Sharing Hope podcast, we talk about topics that are raw and real with child loss, especially how it affects our trust and faith in God. Now, right now, someone out there is battling the suffocating darkness, looking for hope quietly and alone. And here's where you come in. I talked about this last week, and just in case you didn't hear it or you forgot, if this podcast has been a help to you, if it has sparked hope and brought a measure of healing to your shattered heart, then please just take 60 seconds to leave a rating and a written review on Apple Podcast or Spotify. Why is that so important? Because your review is not just feedback. It's a lifeline. Somewhere a parent is scrolling right now, desperate for a way forward, who might find hope because of something you wrote about this podcast. Your voice matters. You can be a grieving parent sharing hope by leaving a rating and a review. Together, we can keep bringing hope and light to others who find themselves hurled onto this suffocating darkness of child loss. Don't wait. We all know how easy we forget things with our grief fog, so please pause this right now and leave a review to help others find the hope you have found. And I want to thank you in advance. Let's go ahead with this week's birthday segment. Charlie Rhodes was born on July 10th and left us at age 9. Rachel Korn was born on July 10th and left us at age 22. Eric Breslau was born on July 11th and left us at age 25. We celebrate the day these children came into the world. We know it will always be a special and an important day and worth celebrating. If you would like to have your child's birthday announced the week of his or her birthday, I would love to be able to do that for you. Just go to gpshope.org/birthdays. I will put a link to that in the show notes. Just fill out the information, submit it, and I will announce your child's birthday the week of his or her birthday. Dave will also send you an email to remind you to listen that week. I want to close by rereading something from Lisa that she wrote in her journal. The path ahead is unclear to me, but it is not unclear for the one who leads me one step at a time. You can be so very thankful that God sees and God knows your path, even if you can't see it. All you need to do is take the next step, no matter how small it may be. Get out of bed, brush your teeth, go have coffee with a friend. Whatever that next one small step is, you can do it. So hold on. Pain eases. There is hope.